guest, the second half of today's program, is the one and only Cynthia McKinney. She is an international peace and human rights activist. She is the former U.S. Congresswoman and Green Party nominee for President of the United States, and the author or editor of 3 Clarity Press books. She is the author of Ain't Nothing Like Freedom. She is the editor of, I'm sorry, I can't say, How the U.S. Creates Sholee Countries. It's a perfectly wonderful title. And, also The Illegal War on Libya. And she's got a Facebook, and I will post all of this information in our chat room. Cynthia, welcome to the program. It's such a delight to have you on.
It's been way too long, Deanna, and I was really happy to receive your direct message on Twitter. So I'm glad to be with you now.
Oh, me too. And so many things have happened since we talked before, and it's just it's just amazing. You call it as you see it, and it's, things have just gotten so drastically out of hand with all the wars and the countries that have been destroyed and the cultures that have been destroyed and the artifacts and so much destruction. It just makes one ill to think about it, and all of this destruction has led to immigration is when you're leaving a place, and immigration is when you're arriving. But people are leaving their countries because their countries have, well, they've become these countries that are no longer livable. The resources are gone. Their families have been murdered, killed by warfare. It saddens me to think about this.
Well, it's really a bad situation, but what's worse is that we don't have a viable peace movement in the United States anymore. And so we've got to completely rebuild. What is surprising to me, or maybe I shouldn't be so surprised, but the facts seem to point to the situation where you've got the Democratic Party that is more warmongering than the Republican Party. Now, you've got so-called progressives or so-called liberals, and, you know, we can talk about that because that's not really true. And we've got the conservatives. I just finished looking at President Trump speak at CPAC. And when he said, we're going to bring our soldiers home, there was applause. Now, when he said that at the State of the Union address, the Democrats did not applaud. So we've got a situation where the conservatives in the United States don't want any more war, and the progressives are the warmongers.
Right. It's like they've just all switched sides or something. Of course, I think that a lot of times they're all on the same side. They just decide to be on opposite sides to give us a feeling that the people have a choice in who they vote for when basically they're following the exact same policy, the PNAC policies that have been in place for 30 years or longer.
That's right. And so, you know, you're right that in very many respects, you look at one and you look at the other and you're really seeing two sides of the same coin.
Right.
Whereas a lot of people say, two wings on the same bird. So I, you know, I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. But what, you know, you just have to wonder, what was Obama's role according to the deep state? Because now we know that we didn't select Obama. The deep state selected Obama. So now why would they select Obama? I believe.
What happened to what happened here? Did we lose me? Did we lose Cynthia? Yeah, that's weird. Yeah. Cynthia, we're no longer hearing you. Interesting. She's still there. I can see her. Okay, maybe, Cynthia, are you there? Yeah, okay, our wonderful producer is going to get her back again. And I'm not sure what happened. Sometimes things happen. And things have obviously happened. So we are going to attempt to get her back again. She is I had her on the program, oh gosh, it's been a few years back. And we had a very good conversation, and I follow her, of course, on Twitter. She's got so much common sense and so much integrity and foresight, and she can see what's going on. She's very objective in what she is talking about. I don't know what happened, dear.
Oh, I don't know what happened. I didn't even realize that something had happened.
Oh,
okay. Dear. But anyway, so what was the practical effect that Obama accomplished in terms of the politics of the U.S. and the structure of the political system? So right now, we know that we've got these two wings on the same bird, or we've got the two sides on the same coin. But imagine if a large chunk of people of the African-American community joined the white community and identified as independents. Imagine now what kind of political leverage the independent community could have, like the so-called swing vote. And we need more swinging of that vote. And that would have been huge, because the powers that be, the deep state, they've spent a lot of money to buy the Democratic Party and to buy the Republican Party. And then all of a sudden, they're going to have to buy, you know, the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, Independence, Reform Party. They're going to have to buy more parties. So this is a great deal. It's as if you can buy the polity of the United States. You can buy the state for very little if you can just, you know, basically control the Democrat Party and the Republican Party. And so that was the most obvious effect of the Obama presidency, was that it saved the two-party, the duopoly, as Ralph Nader called it. But then something else happened. And that something else that happened was that the peace movement was completely destroyed. Now, I happen to have been in the room when the destructive process began. And, so I know kind of like how that happened, but basically now we really do not have an anti-war movement. And the United States has basically really, we've been killing and killing and killing and killing. And you would think that at some point that we could say, okay, let's declare victory, stop the killing abroad, and focus on making sure that we are healthy at home. No. And so that book that you discussed, How the U.S. Creates Asshole Countries, it came from the comment that President Trump made. And right. So I thought that what I would do is I would dig a little deeper, take advantage of this idea that you have these countries that are totally unlivable, and dig a little deeper and find out why. You can trace U.S. foreign policy back to the misery of millions of peoples around the world. And so the problem with the Democrats, a party in which I used to believe very deeply, but lost that, is that what they never talk about is ending the wars. They never talk about to leave those countries alone and allow them to rebuild, let alone trying to rebuild them. Just leave them alone. The Democrats never talk about that. But yet and still, they want open borders and then open borders. And then they not only want the borders to be open so that everyone from everywhere can come undocumented into the United States, but they want those people to have the right to vote. So something happened to the Democratic Party that took it down this road, and I believe that you can trace it back to the new scions of the party. So basically what I believe happened is that there was a power play within the Democratic Party for ascendancy. And that basically is, you know, when the Democrats win, who can put their finger on the nuclear button? And the, what I call the Ziocons, they actually won, and they came into power with a whole new set of wars that the...
Whoops. Okay, we lost her again.
Not even for the benefit of me or you. It's not for the benefit of my neighbor, my community, my city. It's not even for the benefit of the country. So we're destroying other countries. Our young men and women are coming back with their brains addled, their bodies mangled, and it's all for the benefit of another country and another set of people who are not even loyal to the U.S. So when we say that we want to take our country back, that's really loaded language, and we've got to do a lot more than we are currently doing in order to make that a reality.
Right. And I think a lot of people are so busy just putting food on the table and doing the absolute necessary things that they're not educating themselves to what is really going on. There are also too many people that are, they have their hands out because they've been promised certain things. And it's just, and of course we are all programmed to believe what we believe from our past, but that programming, we need to rethink what we believe.
Right. Well, you know what I believe? Nothing. until I actually can do the research and find it out for myself. If it's on the media, the mass media, no. If it's on the corporate media, no. If it's on the foundation-supported media, no. So I will listen to it, and then it will point me in a direction in which I need to go and do some research. So that's what I will do. But I just have to, you know, find evidence for everything. And so what I think has given me at least the longevity that I have, and nowadays I even get messages from folks saying, you know, I used to think you were a crackpot. I used to think you were crazy. I really believe what they said about you, but you're, you know, I think it's the highest compliment when they call me a patriot.
Absolutely. You're the real deal. And certainly, people who, I think that there are people in the chat room that are saying, somebody really does not want, Cynthia's message to get out. That's why we're having some problems with the internet or something. I'm not sure. But, you are a person who thinks for themselves, and you have done so many things, that not just about war, you've talked about things that people have forgotten about, like the theft of the $2 trillion from the Pentagon. And you also support the Palestinian struggle. And so many people are against the Palestinians because they listen to television, and they don't understand what has happened in that part of the world, that the land there has been stolen over a period of a relatively short period of time.
Well, I certainly hope that my sound is better, so that folks can hear me, because otherwise it's just going to be horrible when you have a audio platform and the audio is not good. Then, you know, that turns people off, and the last thing I want to do is turn people off.
No, it's good. You're coming, you know, we're getting the message. It's
okay.
Just that I think a lot of people they don't want to believe it. They want to believe that they're right. Everybody wants to believe that they're right. But you have the facts behind you that absolutely prove that you are. And the history. And you've actually stood up and done exactly, you've based your decisions on what you've learned. And our producer said that the audio is fine. So we just have to, if there are some slight interruptions from time to time. There were just a few dropouts, so we're fine.
Okay, very
yeah.
Good. Very good. Yeah, so what I like to think is that true that our system is rigged. It's also true that the swamp needs to be drained, but none of that is going to happen until we unrig ourselves. If the system is rigged, it's been rigged for the last 200 years.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
That's right. So now we have to, and that means that we've been rigged. So we've got to unrig ourselves. And I think since the last time we talked, I've been back to school. I got my PhD. And so I've given some thought to how we can dig ourselves out of this hole. How can the patriots come back and really take the country back and reinstall the values of the Constitution and the civil liberties that the Bill of Rights is supposed to afford us all. We're going to have a different way of thinking and a wholesale change in our political behavior. There's one phenomenon that is striking, and that is that people understand that the institution of the Congress has become extremely corrupt.
And, yes.
And we've learned about the Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, but you know, the whole regime change thing has become a money-making opportunity for those at the highest levels in the Congress. So you've got Nancy Pelosi's son in Ukraine. You've got John Kerry in Ukraine. You've got Joe Biden and his son in Ukraine. So, and then you've got Madeleine Albright over in Kosovo. And so this, you know, these regime changes are satisfying the pecuniary interests of the people that we have at the highest levels of our government. So we've got to get out of this idea that our representative is good, whereas the other representatives are bad. No, you know, veritably all of them are bad. And because the system itself is so bad. And you've got people, I mean, I used to serve with them, who have become millionaires through the process, through, you know, the Bernie millionaire. Well, you know, I've run campaigns. I run a lot of darn campaigns, and I can tell you that I've never been better off after the elections that I won. I was never better off than when I was when I started the campaign. Now, the reason is because you pour everything that you have into your campaign. And Bernie ended up becoming a millionaire after the campaign was over. And I'm saying, okay, now let me, you know, I understand what's going on here, but you know, and then of course he endorsed, Hillary and went along with the status quo and went along with the, you know, one of the worst warmongers our country has ever had. So, it's not only is she a warmonger, it's just the kind of tin pot corruption that the United States is supposed to be better than. So we've got to see through these people to who they really are. And that includes even the people that we pull the lever for. And I guess now on the electronic machines, you just press, but we've got to see them for the people that they are and not for the people that they say they are.
Right. And it's very interesting to me, if you look back, and you mentioned the time frame of 200 years, when you look back and you see the families and you think, for instance, why would we want another Bush in the White House, which is what we got? Are there no other families that want to be involved in politics? You look at Obama, they're talking about, oh, shouldn't Michelle Obama now run for office? My goodness. And you look back and you think, okay, there were two Roosevelts, there were two Adams, there were two, and it goes all the way back. There were just very few, presidents who did not have another family member that had also been in politics and had also occupied that office. And just looking at history in terms of who was in control at the time should make people ask questions. Okay, we will be right back momentarily after a word from our sponsors. Thank you.
Public Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right, we are back. Our guest in the second half of today's program is Cynthia McKinney. She is the real deal. She's educated. She has integrity. She was a congresswoman until they restructured the district. And imagine that they had to go to that length to get rid of her. And she was the nominee for president of the United States for the Green Party. She is the author or editor of 3 Clarity Press books. She is the author of Ain't Nothing Like Freedom, editor of How the U.S. Creates A-Hole Countries, and The Illegal War on Libya. And she has a Facebook page. And just reading about these countries and what has happened to them and their cultures and their people, it's just heartbreaking that so many people are being slaughtered. And that's what it is. They're being slaughtered, and their cultures are being slaughtered. And I think that had Cynthia won the election, we would be looking at an entirely different country. We need more people like Cynthia McKinney.
Well, you know, Deanna, thank you for saying that. And it really does make a difference what our political behavior is. Because had I been able to even remain in Congress, you still would have had that independent voice that would question everything and demand evidence from the executive branch and demand compliance from the legislative branch for the policies that it sets. So, for example, we would be investing right now in our healthcare, in our infrastructure. I mean, the idea, I got chased out of the country and I had to live abroad. In fact, I'm here now just I decided to take a semester off. I tried to teach after I got my PhD. I tried to teach here in the U.S., but, you know, the powers that be don't want me in a classroom. And so I went to another place. I found a place in Asia that absolutely loved to have me in their classroom. And that's where I have lived for the last 5.5 years. I just decided that I would, you know, I need to be closer to my mom and need to take care of some things at home. So I took the semester off. Now that might become extended, but the fact though is that what we have lost, I don't even know that we even realize what we've lost. For example, you take things for granted. But while I was away, my mom was plagued with infrastructure. The app is so bad. I mean, this is the United States of America. And there are some things that we take for granted. Maybe, how do I want to say this? That the disparity in the way we live and the way of life that's imposed on other people, that's bad, but the United States could be a part of lifting people up rather than tearing countries down.
Right.
And what has happened is that our own country has gotten torn down. My mom was complaining. We went, we went out today and she was complaining, so, why did the car feel like it needed to go to the shop? And it's the roads are so bad.
Oh, I know. I think, right. You think there's something wrong with your car, or if a bridge falls, you think, well, gosh, how come that bridge fell? Our infrastructure is really literally falling apart because the government, local and federal and state are spending money on enriching the rich.
They're already rich. That's right.
Or they're contributing to their money to something else. They're paying for Medicare for all, or Medicaid for all. And it's terrible. It really is.
So I tweet a lot. I'm very, very active on Twitter. And I will read an article about another country. Like, for example, the other day, I tweeted about Luxembourg. Luxembourg, I received a tweet from someplace, somebody sent to me that now Luxembourg is offering free public transportation because they want to encourage people to get out of their cars, which is a good thing, and use public transportation. And they've got the fast train. We don't have a train. I mean, you know.
Right.
You know, let alone the fast train. We should have a fast train. I should be able to hop on the train in Atlanta, Georgia, and make my way to Los Angeles or Seattle. The XFL, you know, I'm a football fan. My mom is a football fanatic. And we've got now the new league. It's the XFL. They are playing. Well, guys, they play with their money, but these guys are playing for their heart because they got a second chance. And this is a wonderful idea. And Seattle is playing right now. I should be able to go and follow, you know, and do whatever. That also enhances the economic activity inside the United States. Everything does not need to be dropped into a black hole, the black hole of war and military spending. That doesn't, it's called the multiplier effect. And if I spend money here, and then that money then is spent again and again and again and again, it redounds to the vitality of the entire community.
Right.
But when you put money in weapon systems that sit and get rusty and or used to destroy other countries, and then you got to replace them, then what you have done is you really have stolen not only from the destruction that you create, but also what you are not able to create because you have used those resources in a destructive manner. So, it was Dwight David Eisenhower who said every dime we spend for war and those war materials is in reality a theft from the people who are in need. And that is the truth.
Exactly. When I was in France, in the late 80s, you could get on one of their trains and, oh my gosh, you would be out miles. It went by so fast you couldn't take pictures. And it was so modern. And then I come back here and I compared them with the train system here, and ours is it's so elementary. And so not only are we not spending money on the infrastructure, but on things like that. And yet they're talking about electric cars and cars that can drive themselves And you wonder, is that some sort of control method that they want to take over cars so that they can limit where you go? Because that is what they've done by not modernizing the train system. They seem to be selectively engaged in modernizing other transportation methods. And the safety on the trains. I live in the Chicago suburbs, and it's taking the train sometimes is very unsafe. It's terrible. And the drug situation. Really, are you trying to tell the population that they cannot control the drug situation? Baloney.
Well, the U.S. government would have to get out of the drug dealing business first.
Exactly, because that's why they're still in Afghanistan, so that they can run drugs from Afghanistan, as they were doing in Vietnam. They were running drugs, and it's the politicians, quote unquote, who are making the money, who are really benefiting from that. And I'm appalled at the money that people are making, and they don't ask questions like Joe Biden and his son. They're so obvious. And people aren't saying, well, wait a minute, Joe, what's the deal with your son making millions and millions and millions of dollars?
And then he calls the guy a fat guy and challenges him to do push-ups, which he probably couldn't do himself. And instead of getting his son out of, you know, well, he should never have done it in the first place, get him out of harm's way, my gosh, but, you know, give some of the money back or whatever. And now his son, you know, the frequenting the strip clubs has made a woman pregnant, and he's fighting even paying for the baby that he's about to have. So this dereliction or abandonment of all values, I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be. I'm kind of open-minded, you know, so I everybody doesn't have to think like me. Everybody doesn't have to be like me. But what I do expect, at least out of my elected officials, I expect them to be good human beings. And we can't even say that about the people who are leading our country.
That's for sure.
And Joe Biden, the fact that he is still in the race for the presidency.
It's shocking.
Unacceptable.
Exactly. It is absolutely shocking, considering the connections that he has made to enrich his family. It is shocking that more people aren't saying, well, wait a minute, how come this is happening? And for them not even to give a reasonable explanation. Well, there's no explanation. There's no reasonable explanations for what they're doing and what they have done.
It's become, you see, regime change has become a racket. And I guess Smedley Butler told us that war was a racket, but he didn't. Now we can say all forms of war, including hybrid war. And so basically what you have is a situation where these are the steps. So first of all, you say you find a country that has a lot of resources. That's a wealthy country. Maybe it's untapped wealth. Like, for example, you go to Burma or Myanmar, as they prefer to call themselves. So you go into Myanmar and you find out that's a very wealthy country. They've got so much gold, and they've got jade, and they've got gemstones, and they've got just everything there. And only about 3 million or so people. So it's a big territory and not too many people. So what do? You say, okay, well, the general that's in charge, that's a bad guy. He kills his own people. And so then the American people believe that. And the next thing you know, you've got regime change. So then what happens? That country that formerly controlled its own resources and enriched all of the people within the country, now their resources are on the open market to the highest bidder, who is not from the country. And it's not even the highest bidder. It's like, you know, the lowest common denominator. And so then that country has to, quote unquote, become open, and then it's stripped of its wealth. That is exactly what happened with Syria.
Right.
Successfully did with Sudan. I wrote the chapter in the book on Somalia, and I showed where the last government that Somalia had was known as a dictator. Now, I never traveled to Somalia, which is why I chose to write the chapter, because I wanted to travel and I just never went there. So what I did was I gathered Somalis and I interviewed them, Somalis in North America, and I was able to find Somalis on the African continent as well as Somalis in Asia. And I interviewed them, and basically what I discovered is that Siad Barre had done what the Libyans had done, had said, hey, you oil companies, you got to do a better job of giving us, the return on our resources. And so the oil companies then organized protests against Siad Barre. Siad Barre was kicked out because he was known as a dictator, and he definitely was an authoritarian government, but does that mean that the people weren't getting the benefit of the statehood, independence? Because, of course, you know, Somalia was colonized by the Italians and the French and the British, split up in three different, and then they were able to come together. So basically what ended up happening was Siad Barre was kicked out, and Somalia did not have a government for 20 years.
Whoa, yes.
So now I'm teaching, and I have a textbook, and the textbook says Somalia is a failed state. Everybody believed that Somalia is a failed state, and that was as far as it went. But nobody decided to take a look at why Somalia was a failed state. So that's what I did. And what I discovered was that the oil contract said that should there be no government in Somalia, that the contract that was enforced, that Siad Barre was trying in Somali people were denied the benefits of their own oil for the 20 years that they didn't have a government.
Wow.
And that continues to today, because the Somali people did not write their own constitution by which the state is now organized. They didn't write it. The United Nations wrote it. So now, Does Somalia qualify as one of those S countries, S whole countries that President's talking about? Yes, but is it the fault of the Somali people who were colonized by the British, the French, and the Italians, split, the one nation of people split among three different people, separated oppressed, then they come, they fight for their independence, they come out of colonialism, and then what's the next thing that happens? They're denied the opportunity to capitalism.
Right. Oh my goodness. Okay, we will be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
Alrighty, we are back, and our guest the second half of today's program is Cynthia McKinney. She is a fabulous person with so much integrity, so much courage. She has more courage than any congressperson ever had, and that's why she's no longer a congresswoman, is because she had the courage to stand up for what she believed and knew to be fact. And you were talking about Somalia. And I, during the break, I was thinking about the Marshall Plan, and which also was followed in Iraq and in all these countries, is that they go in, the U.S. government and its allies go in, they destroy a country, then they go back to the leaders of the country and they say, oh, we can rebuild, but these are the contractors that you need to use. And then these contractors go in, they don't do any rebuilding, they get paid by the country to rebuild, but the money goes into their pockets, it goes elsewhere, it goes to politicians, it doesn't go to help the people in their country. And I think that, our own country is in really, really bad shape as far as infrastructure, as your mother pointed out. Your mother, I think she raised a fabulous daughter.
Well, thank you so much. And sometimes she doesn't agree with that, but I think overall, I think she does. She would agree, and she, you know, she's seen a lot of my suffering because. You know, it's not easy to get slapped down in public and to lose your voice when you thought you had a voice, and to lose that voice in public. And the sport becomes to see how many times you can get slapped around. And so, but the things I say are based on my research. Like, for example, I took my mom to the doctor the other day, and there was a gentleman there who was like a technician, and he, I asked him about the coronavirus, and he said, well, he thinks that there should be a quarantine and nobody should get in, blah, 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 blah. He was just talking. And then I said, well, suppose the case were that the National Institutes of Health had actually financed studies to weaponize or increase the lethality of the SARS virus, which is another form of the coronavirus. And then he told me, not realizing who he was really talking to, you know, mm-hmm. He told me that when he was a soldier and they forced him to take those vaccines, and mm-hmm. He didn't want to take those vaccines, and he knew he was just being a guinea pig, and he was just praying that nothing would happen with his family, with his children, from the forced vaccines. And so I told him that, I didn't tell him who I was, but I said, yes, I mean, I'm so that you, but now let me tell you something. We're going to get back to this corruption. And so what I thought, you know, I took my mom to China. I led a delegation actually of 20 people, and the anti-China propaganda was so bad, I said, we need to go there and understand China
from the ground. And I found 20 people who were willing to self-finance and go there. And we started in Beijing and we ended up in Xinjiang, which is where Urumqi, which is where the Uyghur community is. It's the Muslim majority province. And so you remember all of the talk about the Muslims in the concentration camps and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to go and see for myself, because that's the kind of best way to collect evidence so that you can know what you're talking about. So I went with these people, 20 of them. I should have asked you to go with me. I don't know if you travel, but next time I definitely will.
Right. I was in China too, and I was there in 2007, and Beijing was just, you couldn't breathe in Beijing because of all of the production, and they don't have the same standards. They allowed productivity to leave this country and go there because they were looking for cheaper labor. And
Not allowed. They pushed it because every company that left the United States and fired U.S. workers got a tax break.
Right.
So anyway, yes. Let me finish my story though.
Yes, please.
So we literally get out of China just before all heck breaks loose and they put the lockdown on. So when I came back, you say you, are in, Chicago. Mm-hmm. So now, China's changed a lot since 2007. And my mother is a nurse. So, you know, if you go outside, if you go to her yard, right now, you could literally eat from the yard. It's so clean, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the way we found every inch of China. It was just the cleanest place. Nobody,
Wow. Nobody.
I mean, it was clean. And, so when we came back, we, Chicago, O'Hare, and we got on the bus. I think we arrived at the international terminal and then we had to go to the domestic terminal. I think we had to get on a bus and it was so filthy. It was so filthy. And it's just, indicative of how the United States treasure as well as treasury is going into these wars because we have become accustomed to substandard. I mean, it's just substandard. And the bus that we were on, it looked like it hadn't been washed in, you know, years, not just weeks or months, but like it hadn't been washed in years. And now particularly in Asia, they're building airports where the airport itself is the destination. So like I went to the Singapore airport and you could literally go there and live there, get a hotel there and just walk around and they have a butterfly garden. I mean, you know, they have at the airport. So the airport itself becomes a destination and so China has built these magnificent airports. They've got a new airport in Beijing that is like that as well. I didn't go. We went to the old airport, but the new airport is like a destination. And then you look at our airports. You look at our, we have to fight for clean water. Look, Flint, Michigan.
Yes.
We have to fight for everything. And then, what I wanted to say is, my next book is going to be on coronavirus. I'm working on that now, actually. And, guess which company makes the HIV drug that is now being used successfully against COVID-19? I'll tell you.
Merck?
It's Gilead Sciences.
Okay.
And if you remember, Gilead Sciences, the maker of Tamiflu.
Right.
Donald Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld. So now you've got these people. So I tweeted out on my Twitter, I said, how much money is that? Every which way, every way that they can take from the public treasury is being done.
Right. Right. And they say that they make demands on the public. Oh, you've got to get this vaccine or that vaccine. And the politician behind it or who has all these shares in the company makes a fortune. Well, the tie is so obvious, and yet nobody asks these questions.
Right.
Amazing.
And we have to ask these questions. We have to know what the heck they are doing with our tax dollars, because we're paying the taxes, but we're not getting cleaner water. We're not getting cleaner air. We're not getting better infrastructure. You let it rain here in Atlanta, and the place floods because they put more multifamily dwellings, housing, in too small a space. So you've got this level of congestion, and the infrastructure has not been updated to deal with the population growth.
Wow. And you can say that the same thing about a lot of communities.
Yes, you can say that. And that's because the people at the top are so busy directing the policy toward their pockets that we can't, and that's why we have to change the way we behave. We cannot accept these people who they've lost their way. They might have started out as good people, but the system, being as rotten as it is, has also changed them.
Right. Money can do that.
Yes. So we have to stop, you know, we just have to take, so I figured out a way, or at least I think I have, figured out a way for us to transform ourselves, and in the process of transforming ourselves, we also get the opportunity to transform our country. And in that way, we take our country back. So what is that I am proposing? I came up with this idea when I was thinking about being action oriented. You know, I'm about results.
Right.
And so I don't want to make offering us. What I wanted was for communities to come together and offer up their own solutions and then act on those suggested solutions. And what I called it is power cells. So basically what you would do is you would get 10 or 15 people from one community. And the only requirement besides them voluntarily being there is that the resulting power cell, that grouping, they start off as a group, but they'll end up as a team. So that initial grouping has to consist of people from different walks of life. So you, ideally you would have alt left, alt right, center, left, right, progressive, conservative. You'd have all of that sitting in one room at one table. And so then what we do is we go through some exercises that help us to get to know each other. And there's the one rule is that if someone is speaking from the heart, then you don't listen to the words. You know, like you got to be so PC, you can't say this and you can't say that. No, we want to hear people's hearts. So People sit and we go through some guided exercises that help us get to know each other and help us feel the freedom to actually disclose who we are and why we decided to come to the meeting. Then you have other activities that are geared toward identifying what problems are. So we figure out who we are, and then we've got some problems, and then we go through a different set of exercises where we come up with what the common solutions are. So we have we have different people, and they're from all kind of walks of life. And then we're able to find it, arrive at a consensus on what the problems are that we are confronting, and then what the solutions are that will help us to resolve those problems. And then what we do is a final exercise, well, that is solutions into actions. What action can we take within 24 hours? What action can we take within 1 week? And we go like that. And so now imagine if you have this process replicated 50 times or 51 times or 52 times if you add in Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia. And this is going on in every state. So basically what you've done is you've given people an opportunity to get outside of the echo chamber and to actually deal with people that they think are the problem. Right? Because we all know it's not us. It's those people over there, right?
Sure.
Those people in the room with you. And everybody becomes those people. We're all those people. And then we figure out, okay, this is our community, and we got to figure out how to make it better. And then what you find out is that those people that you thought were the problem, well, you can actually work with them. You never had the opportunity to work with them before, but you can actually work with them. And you can actually talk to them, talk with them, and you can arrive at some solutions. That then enhances our ability to get outside of the boxes that the powers that be have put us in. That is what I would like to do. And, you know, it's sort of like, it's what I studied in school. It's like, total quality management that's done in organizations. All organizations are trying to grapple with change, and they want to make produce better results. And they have these systems, these behavioral science systems that have been put in place in order to make corporations function better. Well, that's what we're talking about. Doing it, but applying it not to a corporation, but applying it to our very community. And so, that's the kind of thing that project that I would like to work on, but I've been so busy trying to earn a living that, you know, just like everybody else that you're talking about, you know, where people are busy trying to make ends meet. And so I've been trying to do that as well. And so I talked to a friend today, and I asked him, because he got fired from, he was a professor at University of Wisconsin, and he got fired when he talked about 11th.
What are you talking about? What?
September 11th.
Okay, let's talk about that.
So he got fired. And
whoa.
Then, yeah, he got fired for September 11th for talking
about it.
11th. And he was at University of Wisconsin. You know, that's an excellent school. And you would think that you would have academic freedom, but no, there was no academic freedom to talk about September 11th. And so he got fired. So then I talked to him and I asked him, well, how do you make a living? And it's like, you know, people like us, we're not motivated by money, right? So we're motivated by something other than material things. So I told him, I don't need much, but I need enough to be able to not have to teach four classes every day, 35 students in every class, and, you know, and over in Asia. I need to be able to do something here. So, he told me, well, go to Patreon and set up a Patreon page. And so he's going to walk me through what he did in order to survive. And now he has several avenues, platforms that he uses to, voice his opinion. And he actually has people who support him. And they support him to the extent that it's enough for him to support his family. He has two children. So I said, okay, well then if I can do that, then I can implement my power sales idea. The book, How the U.S. Creates S-Hole Countries, that book is the result of a power sale. If you look at the authors, you will see that there are people from the left, the right, and everything in between who came together and talk about U.S. foreign policy. And that showed me that there is a consensus for peace. There is an anti-war consensus on the so-called left and the so-called right. On the both of those two wings that are flapping for war do not represent the majority of the U.S. people. And the trip to China, that was a power sell. So I purposely found people on the left and people on the right.
Wow. Now you said that you tweet a lot, and you do have a Twitter account, and I think it would be good if people got on your Twitter. If they followed you, and I've just posted your Twitter account in the chat room, and join her, follow her on Twitter. I think it's very important to follow her and to see what her ideas are, and to gain strength from her. And I think it'd be a great idea to follow her. So anyway, that's in the chat room.
Well, great. Thank you for that, because I'd love to have get feedback. And Twitter is very fast. I enjoy Twitter. So that's great. Please follow me. I'm at Cynthia McKinney at twitter.com, and send me messages and respond to what I send out. Let me hear from you.
Exactly. Yep. I that's the only social media that I participate in also is Twitter, because you don't have to say a lot. You can post articles, you can post audio files, you can post anything. And I think it's very effective.
Yes, that's right, except when they shadow ban you. So I've been told that people have subscribed to my Twitter feed, but they don't get notifications when I tweet. And that means that I'm shadow banned. Yeah. So you have to be careful of that. But yes, and I love to tweet to POTUS, because you know, every tweet that you send to POTUS stays forever. Because now that's the official presidential Twitter handle, and it's like the congressional record. So when you tweet to POTUS, you're tweeting to history.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay. All righty, I'm just writing something here in the chat room. Somebody said that sounds like community organizing, and we know that Obama was into community organizing before he all of a sudden came out of the woodwork and became president, which was a very interesting thing. But organization, people need to organize in order to be able to function, to demand or to ask for or to evaluate their needs. So community organizing, organizing into community is not a bad thing. It's a good thing.
Right, except that I don't know what kind of community organizing he was doing because he came from a CIA family.
Absolutely. His background, that's why I say he gave it a really bad name. Because now when you think of community organizing, you think of all the damage that he did in the Chicago area, all the damage that he and Michael and Michelle did in the Chicago area. Yes, people do have to be organized. And I think that we need to get over our consensus thinking, which you had the courage, you have the courage to stand up by yourself and say, hey, this isn't right. This is not right. And a lot of people won't do that. They will go along with the crowd. And, but you're not that kind of person.
But now, you know, Deanna, I have a question. I know, we're in our final minutes here, but, I have a question. And my question is, what is the efficacy of standing up alone when you just paved the way for somebody else to come in and become a part of the problem? So I stood up alone, and now, you know, maybe this is the difference. My dad stood up alone when he was a police officer. He stood up alone. And he and the system responded. They punished him, but the system responded to the complaint. Now I stood up alone, but the system didn't, you know, it could just steamroll over me. So I'm wondering how we can, I think what we need is more, we need to elect more people so they don't have to stand up alone.
Right. Which takes education, which is what you're doing, why you went into the educational field, and why you're writing books, and why you're on radio programs, and why you are tweeting, because you are educating other people. You didn't run away and just say, oh, there's nothing I can do about anything. You kept standing. That's where you're different, is that you haven't left the fight. You just took it in a different direction to where you thought that it would be more effective.
Yes, yes. So anyway, you know, this has been really good because is there anyone in the chat room who has a question I need to answer?
Let's see. They're wondering about 9/11.
Oh.
Who did 9/11?
Well, I have an opinion. And the opinion that I have is based on the evidence that I know, and what I know is a lot less than what people like architects and engineers for 911 Truth. You know, there's some people who literally have changed their whole lives. They have devoted their entire life to researching that one event. But because of certain things that have happened, like, you know, the firing of the professor, I went to Europe, and I was actually in Paris and at a 911 event, and I learned to my shock that 911 Truth was being equated to Holocaust denial. And of course, it just doesn't make sense. You know, those are two different historical events. And yet, that was the allegation that was made. If you don't believe the official narrative of 911, then you're a Holocaust denier. So, and of course, you know, in Europe, if you deny the Holocaust, you can go to prison.
Right.
So, I think what that whole situation showed me was that who are the individuals or who are the group of people that don't want to see the, what?
That benefited.
That, well, who don't want you to talk about it?
Right.
Who don't want you to talk about it? Well, it's the same people who enforce the law against Holocaust denying. So then, I said, okay, well, now I tell you, Kurt Weldon was a member of Congress from Pennsylvania. Bottom of this. Had in a Armed Services Committee meeting where Abel Danger had been explained. And the situation with Abel Danger was very much like the situation with Valerie Plame, Ambassador Wilson's wife. And that Valerie Plame was tracking the nuclear, what do they call it, proliferation. She was tracking nuclear proliferation, basically Israeli. And that was why they were, Scooter Libby outed her, because he was letting there's this network from Sibel Edmonds. We learned that there's this network of pro-Israeli U.S. people who were stealing U.S. secrets and giving them to Israel. And as a result of that whole thing, they had to, when Valerie Plame was undercover and then Scooter Libby blew her cover, because it was to let these people know who were operating inside the U.S. government that they needed to stop, because Valerie Plame might have been onto them. Okay, so Abel Danger was an operation around these people. Remember that some of the so-called hijackers, that FBI agents actually live with them. They live with them in the same apartment. They lived in the same neighborhood. You remember all of that?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you have FBI agents that are living with the people who supposedly are planning this event? Well, it's also just like the FBI agent and the informant curveball with the world, you know, the 1993 or whatever it was.
Oh, right.
You know, World Trade Center attack. Right. Yeah. So, you've got the FBI is complicit in these terrorist attacks on the United States. Would they do that to the U.S.? Of course they would. So, so basically, as a result of Abel Danger, what we learned is that there were some people of Israel. And when Kurt Weldon decided that he would go to the floor of the House, he was so outraged. He went to the floor of the House and said he was going to get to the bottom of it. Literally within that same news cycle almost, the FBI raided his house.
Right. You never say, you never announce what you're going to do. You just go ahead and do it. Because if you announce what you're going to do, you're going to get knocked off or knocked out.
And that's exactly what happened with Kurt Weldon. He got knocked off.
Yes.
And, you know, so he goes down as a crook, you know, he was supposed to have been showering special favors on his daughter or something. So the FBI raids his daughter's house and then they raid his house. And this is like days before the election. So of course he's going to lose re-election. And then of course his investigation is over.
Right. And where's that money that was missing from the Pentagon? The place where the plane just happened to go to is where they were taking care of the money. Building 7. It's been delightful. Absolutely delightful talking with you again. And I hope that people will follow you on Twitter and I hope that they will read your books. And bless you. I just admire you so much. So thank you. Thank you so much
for inviting me.
Okay, take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. Bye bye, listeners. Talk with you next week.